It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel Pryor, the Sound Mind broadcast guy, been on the air here on KCIS for several years now, and we want to remind people that they can get your podcasts at your website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And you wanted to kind of expand on that term this week. What does it mean to be a Bible-based counselor?
Yeah, tell you what, I saw a couple of articles just recently, and I thought it bore some clarification because there's a lot of opinion out there. And it doesn't, some of it's misguided, and a lot of it doesn't make any difference. And so I wanted to clarify some things for people maybe shopping for counseling. And so talking a little bit about some of the things that are, some of the ideas that are out there, bringing some clarification, and then kind of zeroing in on what you really want to be, how you want to be shopping. There are a lot of good counselors out there, a lot of good Christian counselors and Christian biblical-based counseling programs. So, but all counselors aren't equal, and just because the counselor is a Christian or Bible-based counselor doesn't mean he or she is right for you or has the expertise to help you. So you still have to be shopping. But I was actually going to my own website and came across a couple of new posts, recent articles there, which I found a little bit concerning.
Now, why on your website? What do you have, Facebook piped in there?
This is just the you know, when you do a search on the online, you know, you wind up with a page with
searching
the different links on it.
Okay.
Yeah, so
right.
And so yeah, sometimes it's a shortcut.
Bible-based counselor.
I typed in Bible-based counselor. Yeah, and so
and all and kinds
I,
of things
yeah,
came.
I got
up.
I got a page, and so a couple of articles that so. And so the reason I bring this up is other people are going to be Googling the same thing. And right underneath my name there, right underneath my, at least in on mine, I'm in like the first position, but that may be because of my the browser. But there are a number of articles there, and one of them, very close to my ad, is Bible counseling versus Christian counseling, biblical counseling versus Christian counseling.
What's the difference?
People are going to read that, and the thing you need to realize is that those terms, in a sense, have been hijacked. They don't have the same meaning for everyone. The person that's written that article has, as I say, hijacked. They've used terms that are pretty common, things like biblical view, or if you're a pastor and you're counseling someone, you would just call it biblical counseling. But you may not mean by biblical counseling what is depicted in this article. Or if you're a Christian and you're counseling, and you say, well, I'm a Christian counselor, but you wouldn't necessarily agree with what they say about you in this article. The bottom line is, when you read this article, if you read this article, don't be misguided in thinking that if you call a counseling office and ask them the question, are you a biblical counselor or a Christian counselor, that you're going to get an answer that makes any sense because they won't know what you're talking about.
Hmm. Yeah, when you say that to me, I feel like, well, what's the difference?
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's a distinction without a difference.
Well,
I mean,
within a certain community, they do articulate a distance or difference. It's just that it's not widely known or widely used. Unlike things like rational emotive therapy, or which is a discrete model, and psychoanalysis therapy, which is another discrete model, and those two are nothing alike. The terms biblical counseling or Christian counseling weren't coined originally to refer to any kind of a discrete model or therapy, but they were conveniently used as such within a relatively small community. Say, a seminary or a group of seminaries where they're teaching an approach to counseling. And so they'll say, we're going to call ours biblical counseling. It's a biblical counseling program. And then they draw a distinction between biblical counseling and Christian counseling, which the public at large doesn't recognize that distinction. Those terms aren't discrete for the rest of us. It's analogous to if you and I agreed to, let's get some friends together and let's create our own kind of currency. We won't buy things at Macy's, but I can buy things from you and you can buy things from Pete and he'll buy.
So kind of like a ghetto.
Ghetto. Yeah, but we couldn't take those out to the mall and they would say, we don't recognize that here. It's maybe recognized within your little group. But it doesn't mean anything to us. And it's the same with or it's a somewhat parallel to of the relevance of an ordination certificate. Many, many years ago, in my late teens, early 20s, I went to an obscure Bible school, I guess you would call it, in a little house up in the snowy plains of Alberta, Canada. Not Three Hills, but north of that, further north, more snow. I was an ordained minister when I left, but I couldn't get away with, I wouldn't be able to use that card anywhere.
Right.
Because nobody's even heard of this place and it doesn't mean anything to them. So the ordination was only good for the few people that recognize that.
Well, I like this term here. If you ask biblical or Christian, you'll get a lot of different ahs and uhs, but instead ask how that person views faith, scripture, etc., and its role in mental health.
Yeah, you want to shop the counselor. You don't want to shop the title. You want to know, because again, they're not going to know what you mean if you say biblical counseling or Christian counseling. If you're using it, you think, as a term that identifies a discrete model, you won't... And they might say, I'm a biblical counselor, but you might be talking about, comparing horses and oranges.
But the way you would describe yourself is primarily you have a Christian worldview.
Right.
What you mean by biblical counseling.
Yeah. And when I say Bible-based counseling, that's not the name of a program just seemed to be the simplest way to say what I do. My counseling is Bible-based. It's not pastoral counseling. We're going to get to that right now. There's another article, speaking of pastoral counseling, the next article that down a couple spaces on that same page was how to become a biblical counselor. Now, right above, you see the article on what's the difference between biblical counseling and Christian counseling. Now, here further down, you see how to become a biblical counselor. So you would think that, well, those articles are about the same kind of counseling and they're worlds apart because this term, biblical counselor, doesn't have anything to do with that previous article or what they mean by it. This has nothing to do with a seminary program. This person is saying, if you're a Bible thumper, then you can counsel anybody. All you have to do is say, I'm a biblical counselor and you're a biblical counselor. And so he goes into, some things, but he's really talking about pastoral counseling.
Mm.
And pastoral counseling is certainly pastors do counseling. We should talk then about for a bit about the difference between a pastoral counseling and professional counseling.
Okay, what's the pros and
pros and cons of each one?
Okay.
Of those. Of course, the pastor should have not only a grasp on Scripture, but the pastor should have a relationship with that person that he's pastoring, and so the pastoral counseling is along the lines of sharing Scripture.
A mentor.
Mentoring, the pastoring role. Most pastors today, unless they've gone to a school in psychology, they don't want to do that level of counseling. They don't want to get tied up, can't afford to get tied up time-wise or energy-wise with someone who has like an addiction or a thought addiction or a behavioral addiction or a problem in their marriage that's ongoing. It's very time-consuming, and they haven't—they don't have various tools that they can use. They don't have time to research those tools. They don't have, for example, time to research personality types and all these things that kind of go along with that. But they do very well in guiding people according to Scripture, but these would be typically more high-functioning, we'd call them more high-functioning Christians. Maybe their walk is a little out of step, and they need to be corrected or edified or another term, not really brought to book or disciplined, but sometimes disciplined. Mm-hmm. But these would be people who recognize the Scripture as an authority, and they know how to use the Scripture, and the pastor is leading them along and mentoring, as you said, and guiding them along in that. And that's really the role of pastoral
counseling.
And
some pastors are better at this than others or want to do it more than others. And some churches are big enough where they have enough staff. So they have the pastoral counseling staff who handle this more.
And even those will refer people out to counseling if it's a situation that's going to be more timely, time consuming, or require. I remember one of the things that led me into the counseling profession was as a youth director and a singles director as a younger person, and seeing that there were people in the church who were addicts that could not be helped by the pastoral counseling. The pastoral staff didn't have the time or the training or the patience a lot of times to deal with that one person one-on-one over, you know, day in and day out. So they would refer them out to a regular counseling program. So the pros of the pastoral counseling, you know, the grasp on the Scripture, pastors are walking their flock in a particular direction, and they're interested in keeping people on that pathway, and they do very well at that.
Now, some people think that's all you should need. A lot of people who are against counseling entirely would say that, well, that's sufficient, and that's really all that people need.
Yeah, the problem is that sinners come into the church and get saved, and they bring their trash with them. We all do.
Well, of course.
And as we've talked in previous shows, the distance between society and our faith is getting more and more broad, more and more broad. The secular society is totally divorcing itself from faith and religion and family traditions and traditional values. And so you find those are the people that are getting saved. We spoke in a previous show about the gates of hell, and that some of the people that are going to be saved are going to be from the other side of the gates of hell, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to bring that stuff in with them. And
they're going to be walked out of it.
Yeah, they have to be walked out of it. You know, it's we all know people who have come to the Lord and salvation is amazing. It's a miracle, the miracle of miracles. And that salvation builds a kind of a bridge to life. But for so many of us, there are still things that have to be worked out in our lives. Mm-hmm. Everything isn't set
instantaneously a perfect Christian, right?
Yeah. So there is no broad market term that brands counselors' use of Scripture. The only broad market term are terms that we have applied to the level of formal training in secular psychology, and then are you licensed or not? So when you're looking at these terms like, and they'll probably come up a lot, biblical counselor, Christian counselor, don't shop the term. You have to shop the counselor. If you want to know what the counselor believes, don't just take a term like biblical counselor and think that explains it, because very likely that counselor, unless he went to that particular school, is not going to know what you think you mean by biblical counselor.
So
you're
trying to get across that there's some universal things you should look for in a good counselor.
Yeah,
that all counselors, regardless of their title, should subscribe to.
Yeah, that's what you're going to be shopping for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking for.
Okay, well, interesting discussion this week. How to pick a Christian counselor? Some clarity regarding counseling for Christians, and some terms here. Sound Mind broadcast with Daniel Pryor. You're listening to that this week. People can tell they like the way you think, and they think you can help them. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, you can phone call at 425-778-6169, 778-6169. Also, people email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. These broadcasts are podcasted website, and also offices in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Sound Mind this week, kind of an interesting discussion that was prompted by you searching for your own terms there on the Google or the whatever you use, Bing, I don't know, whatever your search engine is.
Yeah, sometimes it's easier just to Google Bible-based counselor than it is to try to remember where I have the link tucked away.
And you were very fascinated by some of the slogans you heard and articles you read.
Yeah, I was surprised these were new articles, and they caught my attention because they're terminology. They're treating it as terminology that's established and broadly understood and broadly used. That's not factual. And particularly for most consumers, they have no idea what those terms mean. They can read these articles, and that will only tell you what they mean to certain people. And I was surprised at what they meant. To that in that particular community.
Okay, well, again, getting back to pastoral versus professional counseling, the pros and cons.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about pastoral, and you know, if you like your pastor, then you're going to see some pros in getting pastoral counseling. But that pastor will tell you as the counselor that I am, and for years, most of my referrals come from the church, and before I was up here in the Seattle area, down in Tacoma for 20 years, I worked very, very closely with pastors. They do somewhat up here, so there were a lot of situations where the pastor and I would work together on some situations, or there were times when the pastor had taken a couple or an individual as far as he or she could, and then wanted to put them in the hands of someone who they trusted. And I think that's important, too. The pros and cons of professional, obviously, sometimes professional can be, the professional counselor can be dependent upon secular tools and secular viewpoints that they, in a lot of ways, the Bible's kind of dusty in their office, so to speak. They kind of bifurcate or treat the spiritual walk as something very different than mental health. They, in my opinion, they buy in too much into the American Psychiatric or Association's viewpoint, which is very secular.
Very secular.
And so there are some cons to that, a downside, and then the upside would be that they do this day in and day out. And they have an array of tools. If you find a good, mature counselor, and that's important, who has seen a lot of the road, and can help to get you out of the problem, give you some guidance, and give you some tools. That's very good. what about the use of secular tools? Another article that I ran across in Christianity Today, written by Susan Metis, the name of the article, Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, Not a Ministry Guide, which fascinated me because I use Maslow's hierarchy quite a bit, and she doesn't like that. So she has an 8-page article, and I have a 7-page response.
Can you give us a real brief synopsis of what that is?
Well,
is there a way to just say the basic idea?
Yeah, sure. And maybe a lot of people out there have seen it. You can imagine a pyramid, something like the food groups, but this pyramid represents what Maslow had identified as motivational needs. And of course, if you stop to think it through, you would probably arrive at some of the same things that he arrived at. What are the most fundamental things we need here on Earth? And people would immediately probably come to the conclusion that, well, certainly air, yeah. And then I'd say probably food and water. And, of course, that's basically it. You know, those are the survival needs. So those are the first needs that people think about, you know. And so one of the problems with this article is she's taking people from society and trying to transport them back, or without transporting them back, she's seeing if this applies to them. Now, we'll talk a little bit about what the problems are, but actually, if you're really interested, you can read the article, and I'll give you the some more information about it. But if we have to, in order to see what Maslow had his eye on, we have to imagine if we're like Robinson Crusoe or the movie Castaway some years ago,
Or the Martian, more recently, too. The guy was trapped on Mars.
So imagine what you would do if you're in a place where you're the only person. And in fact, the castaway is a great example because when he came to, the first thing he realized is that he's surrounded by salt water and he'd better find some fresh water or he's not going to survive. Now, would he not maybe prefer to sit down and read a book of poetry? No, because his brain wouldn't even allow him to register that.
Right.
You see, he would be driven toward food and water, which in fact he was. And the next thing that happened was he tried to build himself a little shelter. That didn't work out too well. And then he found a cave up in the hillside. After he did that, he went down and looked at the wreckage. So we've got him moving from food and water to shelter, and then finally the wreckage, trying to connect with something. And what does he connect with? The Wilson's soccer ball. Didn't even have to be a human being. And Maslow would say, well, he was fulfilling a belonging need. He just wanted to belong and have connectivity. And then before long, the Wilson ball wasn't serving a deep enough need. He was wondering, how do other human beings, how would they think about me if they knew where I was? What about my friends? And so he finds a way to get back to New York or wherever he got back to, California maybe. And then from there, the close of the show is he's out at that crossroads, and that's what, the purpose of life. And
so
that
you like that
Maslow's
movie.
Well,
I've
reviewed it a lot because it fits so much with that pyramid, and I'm sure that they didn't have that in mind when they built the movie. Mm-hmm. But
you're saying there's value to some scientific things that people have discovered through the years, behavioral sciences.
Yeah, I asked the question, can we use secular tools? This maybe sounds a little bit silly, but, the scripture says that, it speaks of Christ being the light of the world, and yet we all have light bulbs from Edison. And so can we use these secular tools, or is there a conflict? Or another one is miracles versus medicine. Can we use science as Christians, or does God's creation contradict his nature? So if science is looking into nature and how things work, are Christians allowed to use science, or does God's nature contradict his, or does creation, we'd say no, creation doesn't contradict the nature of God. It follows the nature of God.
Well, all truth is God's truth ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to believe that.
Yeah. So this article is somewhat a Don Quixote-like attack, I thought, and I didn't exactly figure out why. I think maybe she had a distaste for secular tools, but she seemed to be completely misunderstood the hierarchy. And for example, she makes a statement that Jesus didn't use a list like this list that I just went through, but he used discernment. Well, that's not to say that he didn't use a list just because he used discernment. If you go through Christ's ministry and did he convert the people before he fed the 5,000, or did he make sure that they believed in him before they healed them? I mean, he was ministering to
needs,
whatever the need
needs.
Was,
mm-hmm.
And so she misses the idea. I think she takes the word need and interprets it as desire or something. She uses ascetics going hungry and yet being spiritual as kind of an argument that they haven't met their survival needs yet, and yet they're way up top with self-actualization. But that's not the way the pyramid works. Mm-hmm. It's misunderstanding.
Well, I like this
that.
Next line. Her concern seems to be that pastors are using the Maslow model to justify feeding people before they preach to them.
Yeah.
But that ends up saying that's probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, yeah. In the end, she sort of backpedals and says, "Of course we need to of course we need to feed the starving children." And I don't think that you would get very far teaching Bible lessons to starving people. Right. Unless you'd fed them first, because in Maslow's view, their brain just wouldn't go there.
Right.
Yeah, and
seems obvious.
And so when people say that a thing like the hierarchy is debunked, I think they either don't understand it or don't want to understand it. But if you're interested in that article, it's I think you can find it at Christianity Today, and the author is Susan Mettes, M-E-T-T-E-S. It's about an 8-page article, and I'm going to be posting a very boring 7-page response to her 8-page article, and that'll be at ChristianCounselorsForum.com. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about, at the close here, about, well, how do we shop for counseling?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I think you have to settle on and realize and settle on that counseling is about change. So when you go to counseling, if you're serious about it, you're going to have to change. It means change of behavior, change of thinking. Of course, you want to find a counselor that's walking in the direction that gives you confidence. But counseling is about change. Well, what kind of a counselor? And this is kind of your rule of thumb. As long as biblical change and discipleship to Christ are the plumb line that you're using to align with, then help can come in a number of different forms.
Okay.
As long as you are using the Bible and discipleship to Christ as your plumb line, that's your goal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's up to you. That's up to you to study that. Maybe that's where pastoral counseling would come in to help people shore up their doctrinal questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But as long as you've got that in mind, that's your plumb line, then lots of different things can help. People have even been helped by secular counselors, but I think they can only take you so far,
right,
unless they have that Christ-centered worldview that defines what mental health is to begin with. So don't shop the title, shop the counselor. You want to find someone that you sense is going in the right direction toward that plumb line that you've. And then, again, you have to embrace change. You're not going to get anywhere in counseling if you think that you're going to go and walk away with the same perspective you walked in with, and somehow things will just be different. You have to embrace the change.
Bible-based counseling from the one and only Daniel Pryor this week on the Sound Mind broadcast. People are intrigued. They want some of your counseling help and your coaching. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Well, you can call 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. Of course, offices are in Kirkland and Edmonds. These shows are podcasted at BibleBasedCounselor.com, and also I have a number of articles that might interest people in different topics at ChristianCounselorsForum.com.
Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.